What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
I'm Inc. Executive Editor Diana Ransom.
And I'm Editor-at-Large Christine Ligorio-Chafkin.
And you're listening to From the Ground Up. Today's episode, Cracking the TikTok Code. About a month ago, I went down to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest, where Inc. hosted our Founders House. I spoke with a bunch of fascinating founders.
Yes, you sat down with Fish Foods founder Zoya Biglari, Hot Take Dough co-founder Gabrielle Brulat, and Bloom Nutrition founder and president Mari Llewellyn.
Mari explained how it took her a minute to get comfortable on TikTok and how she learned to harness the energy when people actually started talking about her business.
Yes, and Gabby, who didn't have a huge social media following at first, talked about how she dipped her toe in gently and then learned to broadcast the real, unvarnished view of building her cookie dough empire. Empire company. It's not an empire.
Not quite an empire yet. And Zoya shared just how much being able to tell a good story resonates across all platforms.
Here's Mari Llewellyn on how she brought in new customers for Bloom Nutrition.
So we definitely had dipped our toe in the business world just through selling PDF workout guides, which I still feel like is the best business plan, because when you have a PDF guide, there's really no overhead. You can just keep selling the guide, keep marketing. You don't really need employees. So it really was a great way to get started. Launching Bloom in 2019, we definitely relied on my personal social media following. So for anyone who doesn't know, I lost 90 pounds in 2017. And that was really where I began sharing tips and tricks online, recipes, workouts, really sharing the ups and downs of fitness. And I think building that community first was a really important step to having success with Bloom when we did launch. But obviously, we didn't want the company to be entirely reliant on me. That is not a sustainable business plan. That's why we didn't call it Mari's Supplements. We called it Bloom Nutrition, thank goodness. So in terms of expanding, I think it's really important to get the product out there. We sent out a lot of free greens. I mean, we still do that. We really hope and want everyone to try it, because I think once you try a good product, people want to keep taking it. They want to keep spreading the message. So really getting the product out there as much as we could and talking about it. And obviously my co-founder and husband, Greg, who's in the crowd right now, is a fantastic marketer and really has a great understanding of how to get content out there and put it in front of people's eyes. So I have to give him credit there. And since then, we've established an influencer program, which I know we'll talk about at some point. But yeah.
Don't jump the gun. We're not ready for that. Zoya, you were also a food influencer. Okay. She has gained prominence by, I guess, basically peeling fruit.
Peeling fruit, yes.
So I've been peeling mangoes wrong, like horribly wrong my whole life.
I'll teach you.
Yeah. No, we're good. But so when you launched Fish Foods, it's obviously like a sort of fish alternative company. And then but you were appealing to people who came to you for fruit. So yeah. How did you kind of like reconcile that?
Yeah, I mean, fruit was maybe the launch point, but mostly it was storytelling. So I'm Persian, we eat a lot of fruit. So I happen to be good at peeling fruit. And that is what really launched this whole series of storytelling and having my audience get to know me as a person, as a business owner. So then the segue was easier when I was like, this is my plant-based fish business. And here I am as a creator. I'm not a vegan, but I have a vegan company. And I think it just helped people understand what I was doing a bit more rather than just, here's this block of vegan fish.
Right. It can be a little jarring.
It's a little jarring.
Yeah. Just went for the hard sell. And then Gabby, you didn't necessarily have like a prominent social media following when you were getting started. So what worked for you?
Oh gosh. We tried everything. Our whole premise at the beginning was showing how we built things. So showing all of the horrible things, all of the good things. There was a lot that happened, especially in those early days, and it still happens. Keeping the consumers and, you know, For You page and anyone else, keeping them super informed with what's happening with the business, even if it's not necessarily the sexiest thing. it really worked for us. And I think people felt like they were able to watch us grow. And we have grown quite a bit since the beginning. So just keeping people super informed in that way, whether or not it's good. So,
yeah. And it probably helps that the cookies are amazing.
They're pretty, I'm biased, but they're good.
Oh, I actually haven't tried them yet, but Mari tells me they're fantastic.
Huge fan of Hot Take. Obsessed.
Okay, so Mari, you have an interesting story in the fact that you kind of were prominent on Instagram long before even TikTok was kind of around. How did you kind of segue into the new platform and kind of what worked for you on TikTok versus what works on Instagram?
Yeah, so I'm definitely leaning towards the millennial side of things. We call our customer the Gen Zennial. So she's young, she's cool, probably cooler than me. So it took me a minute to kind of get comfortable with TikTok. I personally would not say I'm the best creator on TikTok. That's really where we've focused our influencer program. I remember, I think it was 2022, and Greg and I were sitting down and talking about who did we want to work with to promote our greens. And we dabbled with some Instagram influencers. But I said to Greg, I really feel like the people having the biggest impact right now are on TikTok. It's the TikTok creators that have that cult following. And that was where we began to dabble in the TikTok community. And there's so many different types of people on TikTok, which is kind of the magic of it. And although I wouldn't say it's my priority, I've definitely begun to focus on my podcast more and just lean into where I feel like my skill set is. TikTok has become the place where people are talking about Bloom rather than Bloom talking about ourselves. And in my eyes, I think that's more powerful.
Right. And how do you harness that? Like, people are talking about you, and do you chime in? Or, you know, what do you do?
We're definitely active. I think commenting on your creator's content, being super present, being in on the jokes, understanding the trends is really important. And I always say, I think it's important to hire young. I think a lot of companies are afraid to hire younger people, but our social media team is all under the age of 25. I mean, a majority of our team is under the age of 30. We have almost 100 people now, and it's majority young women. And I really feel like they have the pulse on TikTok and what's happening more so than Greg and I do. So we really rely on them to keep us young and cool and, you know, figure out what's going on TikTok. Cause I think it is important, even if the content isn't always coming from us, to be engaging on the creators' content and also, you know, keep our content on brand and keep spreading the message. I love what Gabby said about showing them what's happening, because then they feel really invested in the journey. And that's something we did from the beginning as well.
And Gabby, what's your view on TikTok versus other platforms, and how do you kind of harness, or how do you be successful on TikTok versus the others?
Yeah, I mean, TikTok's been the thing that blew us up. So we really put a lot of attention on TikTok, and I think it's such an organic platform. So we post everything on there. Instagram, we're a bit more selective. It's a bit more formal. I think I was telling you this when we talked earlier, but TikTok is like the epitome of casual for us. Like, we will post anything on there, whether it's like, we've even posted things that aren't necessarily Hot Take related, but just that we think kind of show Elise and I, my sister is my co-founder. So we post just like sister things on there. It's just a lot more casual in a place that we kind of treat as like a personal blog for Hot Take.
This is an excellent segue of like the idea of feeling like you have to put yourself out there personally. Mm-hmm. Have you ever sort of, I guess, since you do put stuff out there between you and your sister, has it ever been uncomfortable for you? Or like, do you just kind of get over it and do it?
Well, for me, I mean, I'm 28, so, and she's 23, so there's 5 years between us. She's definitely younger and more, she was much more comfortable on the camera. It took me I feel like I'm still uncomfortable sometimes. It's taken like 2 years for me to get comfy on there, but so every time I put myself on, I felt like I was putting myself out there. But yeah, it's definitely, we've had some things happen that we have posted we knew would get feedback from customers that is a little bit uncomfortable, like, it's the Wild West on TikTok. Like, people are crazy. They'll post they'll comment things that are hard to see sometimes too, but it creates so much engagement. So yeah, we put ourselves in situations that have felt a little bit uncomfortable, but it's gotten a lot of followers. So
it's worked out so far.
It's been okay. Yeah.
And then Zoya, part of the reason why people have kind of, what you do has resonated so much with people is that they feel like they see themselves in you. And because you have put yourself out there, and, you know, you've talked about your relationship with your girlfriend, you've talked about your heritage. Can you talk a little bit about like what goes through your brain when you're posting and like why put yourself out there like that?
I so desperately want to create content that I wish I could have seen like a decade ago or maybe 15 years ago. I didn't get to see a lot of queer Middle Eastern people who were living happy lives. I feel like so much of the queer community still to this day is a lot of like doom and gloom. So I want to be like a hopefully beacon of light of just, hey, look at how nice my relationship is. We bought a house together. We have a business. Like it's really nice. And I like to just kind of lean into that more. But yeah, I mean, you get comments that aren't lovely sometimes.
So are you going to propose?
Listen.
That's the latest.
Offline.
Yeah. But I mean, and then I guess similar question is like, what's too much? Like, is there a point where you're kind of sharing too much or is oversharing kind of like the norm?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine line. I'm a relatively private person, actually. My girlfriend's been making content for the past decade. So she's kind of what the one that got me more into it. I was more reserved before. And truthfully, I don't think that I would be making content or leaning so heavily into it if I hadn't seen the impact it had made.
Yeah.
The second that I started going viral with my videos, there were hundreds and hundreds of DMs from people who were similar to me in some way and were just so happy to have the content. So then I was like, okay, it's something that's bigger than me. So I can just take the stomach punches every now and then of some stupid comment if it makes people happy to see this content.
Right. Can you talk, all of you talk about how meaningful the platform has been to you? I guess, Mari, go first.
Me personally or the brand?
The brand.
It's been no extremely meaningful to the brand. I feel like TikTok was a really pivotal moment for Bloom. I think a majority of people who come up to me and say they take greens have seen it on TikTok. And it's an interesting evolution because when we first started in 2019, people really only knew of Bloom if they knew of me. Now people know of Bloom and they don't know who I am, which makes me very happy. Like that to me is a great growth. And TikTok has allowed us to get in front of, I mean, it changed the trajectory of the business. It was a huge reason why we were able to launch in Target with the success that we had. We're now in Walmart, we're now in Sam's Club, we're now in Wegmans. And for these retailers, I think they tend to think a little more old-fashioned. And I think having an online influencer brand hit the shelves was a new thing for them. And to see the success and see that it can do well has really opened up the door for us. And I think these retailers are kind of catching on that TikTok and social media is how people shop now. They go into the store and they say, oh, I've seen that on TikTok. My favorite influencer uses that. I'm going to grab it. So it really is just changing the way the consumer shops.
Yeah, let's talk about influencers now. So I have to ask you, Gabby, about this Paige Lorenz oatmeal cookie thing you've got going on. How did that get started? And who is Paige Lorenz? And why oatmeal cookies? We have so many questions.
Yeah, so we slid it, like with all the influencers we've ever gifted or talked to, I slid into their DMs, via hot take. So I slid into her DMs, asked her if she wanted cookies. She said yes, and then she kept asking for them, which I'm like, well, great, we'll send them to you. And then it got to the point, I just was like, would you ever want to do a collaboration? Like, we've never done this before, but you love the cookies. It felt very organic. And for those who don't know her, she's an influencer, but she's dating Tommy Paul. So, like, some people know Tommy Paul, some people know her. But oatmeal cookie, we just said, whatever your favorite cookie is, we'll do it. And hers was oatmeal chocolate chip. So it's something we're definitely going to focus on in the new year. There's some things happening on the back end that will allow us to be able to do more and more of that. But it's something that's been super exciting and just put us on the map with a completely different demographic that's been really fun. So
you've taken a more selective approach to the influencers that you work with. Mari, what's Bloom's approach to influencers?
I have to say that's how I learned about Hot Take. So I felt like that was such a great move for you guys because that's how I learned about the cookies and now we're obsessed. In terms of our selection process, I mean, we were just talking backstage and the second your content blew up, my team reached out. We have a fantastic team.
We were on it.
We have a really great team at the Bloom HQ who are looking for influencers who match the brand. And I think the thing with Bloom is our mission is to be as accessible as possible and really align with women of all walks of life. So it really isn't for anyone in particular.
Why just women? Curious.
I mean, men do take it as well, but I would say since I'm the Kenny loves the greens. He's sitting right there. Men definitely take it too. But in terms of our branding and story, since it came from me, I definitely feel like we, you know, connect with women on a deeper level, but it really is for everyone and any walk of life. So when we are looking for influencers, we work with mothers, nurses, students, whoever it may be. And our ethos is to really let the creator create the way that they do best. Like, we don't try to put any guidelines or boundaries that are going to restrict their creativity. We want them to do what connects with their audience the best. With that said, like, we do keep in mind our brand values and mission and try to make sure the content aligns with that. But it's been really fun working with, you know, so many different types of people. And we do events every now and again, and we get to meet them face to face, which is really special.
And what are the stats that you look for in somebody you want to work with?
Oh, that might be more of a Greg question. He's more of the numbers guy, but it's less, I think with TikTok now, it's less about the following, because someone could have a massive following and have no connection with their audience. We really try to make sure that their community is locked in and they trust who their, you know, their following. So for example, we just did a collaboration greens flavor with Mama Calls. I don't know if anyone's heard of her, but her name's Carly. She's a mother. She lives in South Carolina and she has such a loyal following. We did a new flavor with her, orange passion fruit, which is delicious. And people loved it. And it sold out very quickly because she has that cult following. So it really isn't about the number of followers anymore. It's about what connection do you have with the community.
Right, how dedicated they are. And then I don't, Zoya, honestly, don't really know if you have like an influencers program, but I do know your co-founder, Paul, is like the personal chef for John Legend and Chrissy Teigen. So has that worked for you? Like, have you been able to parlay that into something?
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful, growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We do have a lot of great celebrity supporters, but mostly right now we're B2B because I like to consider us like the early stage of Beyond Meat and Impossible Meat, but for seafood. So similar to that experience, I want the consumer to try it in a restaurant setting first, where you can have it as sushi or ceviche or poke and be like, wow, that's really spot on, pretty close to the real thing. We do ship out to consumers with like a spicy tuna blend, but we haven't done a whole lot of influencer marketing quite yet. So far, the main influencer is you're looking at her right now. But we do have a lot of, I mean, we're food content creators, my girlfriend and I. So we have a lot of friends in that space. We're very lucky in that way. And people are starting to post about it a bit more. We haven't gone super heavy because, as I'm sure you guys realize, it's a lot of effort. And whenever one of our videos does go really viral, we have thousands of people who will message from across the country who want it, but I can't send it to them yet. So that's a bit of a wasted effort.
Yeah, you don't want to necessarily grow too much yet.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do you hit the B2B folks?
Slides their DMs. That's where it's very helpful for myself and my girlfriend have a big following, because when you slide in someone's DM, you have a much better chance at getting a response. We got our very first partner ever was Erewhon, and I slid into their physical DM. I walked right in and I said, hey, the vegan fish that you guys have is not excellent. Mine's better. And then I took that account that day. So sometimes you just have to be very, very ballsy. But yeah, sliding into DMs really works.
So what do you do if TikTok goes away? You know, there's the prospect of it getting banned. There's, legislation now. Who knows what's going to happen? But then just generally speaking, Meta could change its algorithm. You know, you're sort of at the mercy of this platform. So what's the strategy there?
It's a great question. And it's something that we've definitely thought about. I mean, TikTok came close to being banned a couple of times. And that really made us look at our plan and say, okay, we need to diversify and think about this. I think the fact that we're now in so many retailers gives us a really strong base and it doesn't make us so reliant on TikTok. I also think if TikTok got banned, people would go somewhere else and just start something new because people want to create and people are on social media. So they would just gravitate somewhere else and we would be ready for that. I think something we've done really well over the years is just pivot quickly. Anytime there's been a shift in the industry or online, we're quick to move over to that platform and we're not afraid to make pivots. So I think we have that in our heads, and I'm sure that TikTok creators would simply move somewhere else and we would move with them. So,
yeah, I'm super curious what's going to happen. There's the idea of it getting, you know, purchased by a U.S. company. Who knows? So maybe TikTok wouldn't go away necessarily. So we'll have to wait and see. And then, so Gabby, what's your strategy for diversification?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about so many different things. We've actually talked about physical implications, like would we ever do something like multiple cookie windows in different cities? It kind of depends how we want to push. We're really trying to figure out what we want to do with the business in general. I'm going to talk to her after about retail. Like, we're just trying to figure out where we want to go. So it just kind of depends. But I think if it were to stop, honestly, I'd be not excited, but it would just be another challenge. And I think that there's so much that you can do outside of social. I think we'd focus a lot on the physical implications, like how are we getting into communities, the old fashioned way, I guess. But I think the physical like connection with community is something that's really important for us and something that we've talked about tapping into already. So I'd probably go that direction. Yeah.
And then Zoya, what's your strategy if TikTok were to go away?
Probably what they just mentioned. Yeah, move on. Instagram is still very strong. Honestly, I think that TikTok took a lot of Instagram's shine for a second, but now it's starting to revert back on the more influencer side. Interestingly, I'm way bigger on TikTok, but so many brands actually pay me specifically just for Instagram. So I think that Instagram will still kind of reign supreme. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot that can be done.
So part of the sort of scuttlebutt right now with working with influencers is some brands have gotten criticism for just sending product because maybe you're just sending stuff and they don't really want to make anything with your product. And so it just ends up being like wasted. Like there's videos of people just having closets filled with merch and never doing anything with it. I want to know, like, are you strategic in how you send stuff or do you just kind of send stuff to people who may be influencers?
Good question. I get a lot of PR that I feel like is wasteful, honestly. And I would say we are very intentional when we do send PR boxes. We only send them for new launches and we'll often only send one bottle of greens. So it's like the one flavor that we're launching along with a couple accessories, but we really try to not do it excessively and just be really mindful. Also, PR boxes are really expensive to make. So there's a lot that goes into them behind the scenes, the way the box opens, the way that everything's placed. So I do very much respect the brands that are putting time and energy into PR, but I do feel like a lot of them are sending like every shade of the foundation. And it's like, I definitely don't need every single shade. So I think being mindful about it and just really focusing on a specific list of people you're sending it to. I mean, this has evolved over time. At the beginning, we were definitely sending more out because I think that's important when you're starting a business, but now we're definitely more selective.
Yeah, that's great. And then with Hot Take, I mean, your dough is tough to send, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, if she ever sends to influencers, she'll have the same problem being frozen. But because we're frozen, we aren't able to just mass send it. So we have to like get confirmation, make sure they're going to get home. Like we have a form they fill out that's like, will you be gone any dates? We're going to send it this day. Will you be home to receive it or can someone receive it for you? So it's really limited us on just like sending it out to people, which has honestly been good though, because the people that get it are very intentional about it. Mm-hmm. And we still to this day have not paid any influencer for any sort of advertising. We have only done organic and only gifting. So we have just like, we'll send it sometimes hoping that they post. Most people are actually, because they are intentional with it and it is frozen, like they know it's coming, they will actually post about it. But obviously we've had people that don't, and that's totally fine too. But just trying to be intentional with it. But yeah, it's more out of the circumstance of the dough rather than, you know,
yeah, just not wanting to. I guess, you know, it won't end up in some closet somewhere, right?
It'd be a little melty in there.
A little gross. We do have time for questions. Anyone have a question for our great panelists? Yes.
Hi, my name is Amelia. Just interested as a PR person in the room, great, great work on all your brands. I'm like going to look them all up. Love hearing all about the work you're doing with like content creators and influencers. My question is, like, are you pitching or sending product to media personalities and the media? You know, like, my colleague and I, we do a lot of, like, sending things out to media the way you're doing it to influencers. Or have you found that the media just isn't responsive?
I'm going to eat the cookies and try the greens. So if you guys fish foods, I'm going to try it all. I promise.
We do at Bloom, yes. We didn't until very recently, but now that we work with PR and we have certain people that we love working with, anytime we have a new launch or drop, they are at the top of our list. So when we're looking at that selective list of people we're sending the PR box to, we are sending to PR as well, for sure.
I actually think that's a really great question. I mean, it speaks to the idea of, like, no offense to myself intended, like, but are media people even that important anymore? Are the influencers really the things that move the needle for brands?
I think media people are super important on both sides. What I can say, it's harder to find them. That's the bigger issue that I've come, because I love getting the story across too. And it's much harder to find media people, whereas For You page will feed you influencers.
So they come to you, right?
Is just that visually, they come to you, and it's easier to click on their page and be like, oh, they make this content and whatever. But it's very hard to find a writer or something unless you happen to read an article that they've already written, then find their page, you know? So it's
harder. A lot of effort.
It's worth it, but it's a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also trying to not get lost in the mix of people that do try to contact them. Like, I remember back in the day, and we were very small at this point, but we did try to reach out to media and we got no responses. So I think I felt a little bit discouraged, just as like, well, maybe this isn't the right, you know, situation. We're just going to have to push on our own. Maybe now, though, that we're a little bit bigger, it's something that I'll look into more, because we've got a little bit more on our side. So
it's really interesting. It's like you kind of have to have a story beyond just the company. And you have to develop a buzz somehow that's like ineffable somehow to get that attention. So you did the right thing, obviously. It's working.
Maybe we'll try, though. Yeah, now that we're a little bit bigger.
Anyone else have a question?
Hello. My company does food and beverage all over the U.S. for a lot of major events, mostly at trade shows. What we do is we build traffic in clients' booths by the way of food. That traffic gets into the booth and creates buzz on the trade show floor, and it's free. It's free for the attendees to have that treat, either aromatic or custom colored, whatever. My question to you is, do you feel TikTok is best for product, or have you heard that it works for services like this?
I feel like food does really well on TikTok. I think you are set. I really do. I mean, you probably know well as well. Like, people love watching food content, either the preparation of the food, or maybe it's a really aesthetic food, or maybe it's very different. Like, I think you could really do something with that. I would definitely try TikTok. I think product is actually more challenging than food, because people love food.
it teeters, but usually it's like the number two category in TikTok, food and bev.
We do have time for maybe one more question.
Hi. I'm also Mari behind the Blooms. And I was a Bloom subscriber for a while before I got rid of a permanent address, so I couldn't keep the subscription going. But I received so many little like treats and surprises during that time. And it was amazing to get all these little gifts. It was so cute. And so I'm curious about the role of like surprise and delight, you know, in a product-based company, and also maybe even on TikTok. Like, do you surprise and delight your followers and your community as well? I'm curious about that.
I love that. Yeah, we did used to send some, I think we still do send goodies in our Bloom packages. I think consumer experience is so important. Like, even the fact that you remember that means so much to me, and means we did the right thing. Because I think, especially when you're establishing your brand, I mean, we just launched in 2019. We're still pretty young. We want to make sure that that customer experience really encapsulates the Bloom brand. We want to be approachable, fun, friendly. We want them to feel a part of the community. So yeah, surprise and like really connecting in that way is really important, for sure.
Amazing. Thank you all so much for joining us. Gabby, Zoya, and Mari.
That's all for today's episode of From the Ground Up.
Be sure to subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. Also, if you like this episode or have suggestions of what topics you'd like to hear about, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or reach out to us on Inc. social channels on LinkedIn, Instagram, and the app formerly known as Twitter.
From the Ground Up is produced by Julia Hsu, Blake Odom, and Avery Miles. Mix and sound design by Nicholas Torres. Our executive producer is Josh Christensen. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.